Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. If you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Bum, 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 bum. I feel free. Bum, 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 bum. I feel free. Hey, this is Josh Allen Friedman, otherwise known as Josh Allen, and I am here with Mr. Media, Bob Engelman.
I'm Bob Engelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. On today's show, I'll welcome back singer and songwriter Josh Allen Friedman. He just released his first new album in 15 years, 60, goddammit. It does not come fast on the heels of his last product, 45 Sucks. On today's show, he'll perform two songs, This Radio Don't Play Nothing But the Blues, and Deep River Blues 2. Stick around. Thinking of asking singer-songwriter Josh Allen Friedman how 60 is treating him? I'm not sure that's such a good idea, even if he did title his first new album in 15 years, 60, goddammit. Hard to believe this former New Yorker, he's been a somewhat unlikely Texas transplant for years, hasn't produced a new record in that long. Could that be true? Friedman, recognized as much for the books he's written, including Tales of Times Square, Black Cracker, I. Goldstein, and Warts and All, written with his brother, Drew, as his music, has been saving up for this moment. Among 60 Goddammit's 11 tracks, you'll find terrific covers of Blacks and Blues, including Isaac Hayes' theme from Shaft, Ray Charles's What Did I Say, and Tush by ZZ Top. But I'm always most interested in Friedman's own compositions, and my favorite here is This Radio Don't Play Nothing But the Blues. You can find the new album on iTunes and Amazon, by the way. Longtime viewers and listeners know I'm an easy touch for members of the Friedman clan. This is the 7th interview I've done with men named Friedman. 2 for Josh, 3 for Drew, 1 for brother Kip, and 1 with dad Bruce J. Friedman. Each is laugh, story, and art filled. Check out the archives and find your favorite. Josh Allen Friedman, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Hey. It's good to be in St. Petersburg.
It's good to be in Texas.
You know, when I see St. Petersburg, I always just assume it's Russia. Even though I know you're in Florida, but I pretend that you're in the great city of St. Peter. You know, it used to be called Leningrad.
Yeah. It's funny, during the Olympics, we're recording this in August, during the Olympics about a week ago, we were watching the swimmers, and there were three girls. I'm in St. Petersburg. It's Pinellas County. There was a girl from Clearwater, which is in Pinellas County. There was a girl from Dunedin, which many people will know is the spring home for the Toronto Blue Jays. And there was a girl from St. Petersburg, Russia. So of the 8 girls swimming, 3 of them seemed to have connections to where I am. It was kind of weird. So,
well, you're all Floridians.
Yeah, except for the girl from Leningrad.
A great literary tradition that's emerging from Florida of novelists. It's its own genre now. There's only about 10 guys, but
that's true.
I know my brother Kip is attempting one, like a straight out Florida fiction. That's I don't know if it's an official literary category yet, like black humor or new journalism, but it seems like it will be.
Well, it is. I mean, you've got Elmore Leonard set most of his novels here in Detroit. Carl Hiaasen.
Yeah.
Tim. Oh God.
Those are the big guns.
Yeah. So that's good. So what you're telling me is I should be preparing for interview 8 with a member of the Friedman clan.
Well, Actually, it may be a year or two off, but I think he's doing it. It's all about Florida.
Excellent.
And how in crazy you guys are down there.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, while we've been setting up for this interview, I see that a big scare went out that there's an epidemic of Zika attacks in Miami that was announced just about an hour ago. So, yeah, it's just never stops being a fun place to be.
Well, just keep using that antiseptic on your hands, Bob, down there in Florida. You know, it's offered in many stores, you know.
I don't know.
She's with an epidemic of a pinhead disease is about one of the scariest things I've ever heard. What would you rather have, Zika or Ebola?
Oh.
Probably Zika. Better to be a pinhead than to just turn into an Ebola corpse.
Well, there's a lot of pinheads in our politics today. But okay, look, we're getting off topic here. We want to talk music. Let's bring it around. So I got to ask you, I mean, as someone myself who is kind of crossing the threshold of his mid-50s, I want you to lie and tell me that 60 is tops, that it's the, you know, it's the Empire State Building.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of guys have not made it to 60. I know a few dozen friends who are not with us anymore. Maybe they're on to a better place. A lot of them checked out in their 50s, in their 40s. And I guess age is irrelevant compared to how you take care of yourself and your genes and your luck, because I don't see any reason why you can't peak in your 60s, you know, and do everything that you dreamed of that you wanted to accomplish in your 20s. If you kind of take care of yourself and think the right way, my attempt is going to be to peak in my 60s. Now, I can't run as fast as I used to, but that's one of the only, you know, there's a little less hair. Maybe you don't quite, you know, function the same way all, you know, just as like when you were 19, if you know what I mean. But you're very close, and there's no reason why you can't have your best years in your 60s now. You know, there's a lot of medicine and supplements and ways to keep yourself healthy that our grandparents didn't have. So that's the way I'm looking at it from the best vantage point that I'm pretending that that's how I'm looking at it, you know.
So you've been 60 now for about 6 months, if I have my math right. When did it hit? When did the number actually hit you? Was it as it was coming up, or since it?
Well, the whole year of being 59 is your prep, you know. As a matter of fact, every zero that you turn, you have a year to prepare for it. I was shocked when I turned 20. You know, I was more shocked at turning 20 and 30 than I am now. 30 and 40, I fell apart. 50, I was calm and ready for it and prepared. And the same with 60. So far, it's been a breeze.
Really? But so then why is the album God Damn It?
Well, my wife named it. My wife gave it the name. She said, call it 60, God Damn It, because that's kind of what you figure. It sort of sounds like an old man in denial and who's like fighting against, you know, and really a lot of us when we're 60 now are not old yet. We're still at the upper range of middle age, you might say. I have a 16-year-old daughter. So I started a little bit late with the whole father thing. That's why I haven't been touring, playing, and gigging as much. I pulled way back when Chloe was born 16 years ago because I was the diaper changer and the full-time daddy-o while, you know, and with Peggy going to work. So that's at least my excuse for not playing as much, and especially in the last few years pulling back. So this is a big push forward for me to have completed this album. It took a few years, put everything I had into it. I mean, and it's kind of starting to take off a little bit in ways that I'm hoping keep, you know, exploding. I don't think anybody has an acoustic guitar sound like mine, and does what I do on acoustic guitar, my particular. And I focused on that. I mean, I could have tried to make a pop record or a rock and roll record with a band or a traditional blues album with a band. But this is really what I do that I don't think anybody else does with an acoustic guitar. Very you know, laser beamed into what I think I do best.
Well, I know I want to ask you about the music in a second, but I do want to point out that, see, I was thinking, since you named the album 60 Goddamn It, that maybe you were frustrated with 60, but I was going to point out that, of course, your pop is still, you know, still going at it, which is a good sign for you and your brothers and your sister, right?
Bruce J. Friedman, my dad, is 86 now. And he writing-wise, he's as good as ever. He can do anything with as much power as he could have 40 years ago. And talking-wise, physically, he's not running around. He's slowed down a lot physically, but mentally, he's just as sharp as ever. So, I mean, if he were to write a new book, it would be he's at the top of his game. He writes shorter pieces. He's written short stories. I think Tablet and a few other places have been publishing a handful of short stories that he recently wrote. And so, that's a good sign, I guess.
It's amazing, raising you and your brothers, that he has any mind left at all.
That is amazing, but he guarantees me I wasn't as bad as I thought. He says, Josh, you were a walk in the park. You know, and I thought I was a bad kid and I was in trouble and everything. He now says it was no big deal.
Interesting. You know? Revisionist history, or you think he's telling the truth?
A little bit. You know, I mean, I had a rough time as a teenager, and my parents had to come in and get me a lot of times from all kinds of trouble for a few years there. But they don't seem to remember much of that. So I'm not going to remind them. How much trouble I was when I was 15.
Be interesting in 10 years when you and Chloe look back on the teens and early 20s and see where things are at.
Well, you know, Chloe's a delight. She's just absolutely delightful. But we do experience the whole world of teenage girls and what they go through. Mm-hmm. And it is really something I never knew. You know, the stuff that girls have to put up with and go through. It's different from boys. It's probably tougher being a girl. I don't know. It's tough being anybody.
You think
whoever
you are. Do you think it was easier for you having a teenage girl in that you waited rather than dealing with a teenage girl in your 40s?
Yeah. If we were in our 20s when we had Chloe, I can't imagine what that would have been like. You know, I mean, I was one of the editors of Screw Magazine and covering Times Square every night for 10 years. Probably couldn't have been a parent. Wouldn't have been the same as being in your 40s when you start out. And now I feel like Ward Cleaver, you know, and Patty Duke's father or Gidget's father. You know, I wear the same white boxer short underwear, the same sock suspenders. And, you know, I relate to those men now.
Never saw that coming, did you?
No, I really didn't. It's, second act, third act, maybe even a fourth act. To have that. Of course, a lot of my friends are grandparents. I mean, Jesus, Ringo Starr is now a great-grandfather as of this week, and Mick Jagger is a great-grandfather.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And look at them.
And he'll probably have another kid before he's done.
Oh, he's in the process right now. I think he's got a 29-year-old girlfriend who he'll have another kid. But he's a great Mick. Think of Mick Jagger being a grandfather, and he still dates girls in their 20s. A great grandfather.
Women will hate it, but I say power to him.
I'm sure he's great at it too. But those are inspirations for guys like me who are like to look up to what the Stones are doing in their 70s, yeah. And McCartney. And Dylan out on the road all the time. I mean, into their 70s. Of course, they have singular, unique careers in history. There's nobody comes close. Maybe they're the only ones who can do that.
It's funny, though, isn't it? That they're doing it. Well, yeah, and they're winding up having careers as long as Sinatra, whereas 25 years ago, no one would have predicted these guys would still be on the road.
It was unthinkable.
Yeah.
They thought when I'm 64, they were going to be old, you know, old bent over people, you know, at the Isle of Wight. And of course, when they were 64, they were still, you know, running around, you know, Ron Wood or something at 64 was surrounded by models and acting, you know, drinking people under the table. So age has changed. The whole nature of age to us is a whole different thing from what we grew up with from our parents, our grandparents. You know, whole different ball game.
So much for hope I die before I get old.
Well, I'm kind of glad I didn't die before I get old. You know, there's only, I mean, at my age, what is there, another, if you live out your life without any major, without any surprises or anything, you expect another 20, 25 years, 30 years. That's a lot, enough time to get some more things done. And no, a lot of my friends did die before they got old. You know, so whatever is it's worth here on Earth, I think there's it's worth living out a full lifetime here in America. You know, we have it better than a lot of the rest of the world. Stick it out, man. The clock is ticking. You don't have to be here forever. You know, why not get old?
Yeah. I'll take 20 years. I don't think 40. I think 40 would be too much the way I'm going, but 20 would be nice. I'd like to be here another 20.
Yeah, and we don't know what kind of benefits are coming to us in 10 or 20 years. We might be able to have ways of feeling better and taking better care of ourselves so that we will be. I mean, if you can climb a mountain when you're in your 70s and run a marathon in your 80s, which some people do, that's a pretty high quality of life. You know, if we're refined, if we end up having to be bedridden and invalid and in pain, no. But if we can be active and able to enjoy, and you know, this is boring. That I'm saying.
No, it's interesting. Listen, if you're gonna
being 60, you know, there's still some things to look forward to. You know, knock on wood, some great, hopefully some greatness to look forward to.
I think if you title an album 60, goddamn it, you have to open yourself up to the fact that people will want
right.
to talk about that.
That's why we're talking about this. Is exactly. If it's like God damn it, but it's not really. It's you know, 60, okay. You know, it wouldn't have sounded as dramatic to say, 60, I'll take it. 60, okay. Let's roll with it.
Well, all right, so let's talk about what makes you feel young, which is this record and certainly the song you're going to play in a second. The first song you're going to do is This Radio Don't Play Nothing But the Blues. So why don't you tell us a little about how that song came about? I think you told me it had something to do with your daughter.
Having a teenage girl and all of her friends piled into the back of the car, I will confess one thing that alludes to age, which is that I am appalled by today's music. As a matter of fact, I'll admit it because it's not it's just the truth. You know, most rap, hip-hop, and Taylor Swift or Justin Bieber down the list, it makes me physically ill. It seems to go against everything that I learned and was taught and believed in about music in the 20th century, which is long over the 20th century. So you may say I'm stuck in the 20th century in that regard, but I'm so be it. My grandparents may have been confused and disgusted by Chuck Berry. And I think, am I the same as my grandparents? Well, I decided I'm not. I know a lot more about music than my grandparents, and I care about it in a whole different way. And, you know, I should keep my mouth shut about such things, but I couldn't take what I hear in the radio with the girls in the back seat, and whether it was a Taylor Swift or a Justin Bieber or any number of rap groups that even me as a former editor of Screw Magazine, like, says, oh my God, and turns off the radio at some of the things I hear, you know, booty songs that I hear, you know, aimed at teenage girls in the car. You know, so I've become an old man in that sense. So I finally laid down the law. I said, girls, this radio don't play nothing but the blues from now on. Off onto KNON, our local blues station, where Blue CD, and of course they hold their ears. But I can't take it. I'm going to get in an accident when I'm hearing some of these hip-hop songs. I get physically ill and start to, like, keel over. The nature of the song. You want me to go into it or wait?
Oh.
It's better on the album than what I can do into my computer right now.
Well, I think we'll take our chances here. I think what's good about this situation is that there will be people who are going to hear you for the first time. And even though... We'll point out the quality of this type of recording is nowhere near the quality of the studio recording.
Oh, yeah,
recording.
This is just a little – it gives you a glimpse of what it's like, I guess, over here, you know.
Folks, here is Josh Allen Friedman on guitar singing, "This Radio Don't Play Nothing But the Blues."
BB's on cue, 102, saying hey. Brady's on the morning zoo, playing hideaway. The sky is crying on the Weather Channel news. This radio don't play nothing but the blues. Got all my girls in my Honda, hey, hey. Turning every station in frustration, you might say. Oh, Daddy, please make that black cat moaning stop. I said, you can turn the dial a mile, it won't play no pop. Listen up, you girls, now I'm laying down the news. This radio don't play nothing but the blues. NASDAQ, the NASDAQ quotes the seventh son of John the Conqueror. Elmo James is on the reins. Hurts me too. But he's on the ticket, you know he's a sportsman man. So don't touch that dial, my little child. It's coming out your shoes. Listen up, you girls, now I'm laying down the news. This radio don't play nothing but the blues. This radio don't play nothing but the blues. This radio plays a lot of blacks and Jews.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. All right, folks, let's take a quick break here for a word from our sponsor.
J-E-L-L.
Extra, extra, extra good news. The makers of Jell-O have discovered a way to give you rich, luscious chocolate pudding far more easily and far more economically than ever before. With the new Jell-O chocolate pudding powder, you can make old-fashioned pudding, smooth, creamy, and chocolatey, just like the ones grandmother used to make back in the good old days. Now you can have them again, and this is all you have to do. Just combine the contents of a package of Jell-O chocolate pudding with some milk in the top of your double boiler, letting it cook until it becomes smooth and thick. When the mixture has cooled, serve it in sherbet glasses. You'll have enough for six helpings, and that means six happy people. Jell-O chocolate pudding is so simple, so inexpensive, and so downright delicious that you mustn't delay trying it. Ask your grocer for Jell-O chocolate pudding, and if he hasn't put it in stock yet, be sure he orders it for you. Remember the name, Jell-O chocolate pudding.
All right, and we're back. Josh, I got to ask you, choosing covers is kind of a tricky business for a musician. I mean, you want to pick songs that you love, but also ones that that you can make your own in ways that are unique when put against the original. Am I overstating it here? Or? Michael?
Well, we don't like to use the word covers anymore.
Oops.
Unless you're really doing covers in a, you know, as a cover band in some bar or disco where you're supposed to do covers. I mean, when some of us, you know, I think when I take a song, I try and really make it part of my, put my blood into it and make it a whole different thing. Like, you know, What I'd Say or something is a piano motif that everybody in the world knows from Ray Charles's original record, you know, 55 years ago. But I don't feel like I'm doing a cover when I do it, even though it is, but it's such a familiar motif. It's been done hundreds of times different ways, and I think I put a whole different spin on it by playing it on guitar in a way that's completely different.
Well, that was a song I was going to ask you about, because...
So it's not really a cover, even though you could... That's the old way of saying it. It's sort of like a wholly new way of presenting it.
How long did you have to play around with it to figure out how to make it your own?
Well, it kind of just playing in bars and honky-tonks around Texas and everything, I probably fell into it one night just out of nowhere. And just went, this is, you know, I'm rocking the audience with this a little bit. And then I developed it more. So over the course of a few years, I developed a different arrangement for it, you know, over the course of years.
And there's so many Ray Charles tunes to choose from.
Well, of course. You know.
Why this one? Why not, I don't know.
I've done plenty of others in all the nightclubs. You know, I used to play, you know, thousands of nights in honky-tonks and across Texas, so I would do I Got a Woman every night, you know, a rockabilly sort of version of it, and I would do a Georgia in Ray Charles's style. I still do that occasionally if I'm, you know, that I consider more of a cover. What I Say, I feel it's almost like mine. It's like this, I have this tune Cat Squirrel on the album. That was originally done by a guy named Dr. Ross in the late 50s. He was a blues singer that B.B. King loved, not very well known. And Cream picked up his tune, Cat Squirrel. Turns out it's traditional. It's not credited to any songwriter. It's just a blues motif. So it would have been, people would have been doing it in the 20s without any songwriter. I took it it took me years, and I worked out my own arrangement to it and added a whole like 2.5 minute middle section that I wrote. It's like a second part of the song, my album. So I don't think of that as a cover at all.
Yeah, I was looking down at the album for a second, the CD, because I remembered as I was looking through the credits that you made a point of saying here, traditional, arranged, and adapted by you. It was a slightly different way of describing somebody else's song in the way that you handled it. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Right. Well, most people would know it from Cream, who it was on the very first Cream album in 1967. You know, which probably sold millions of copies in the late 60s and to this day. And they have it listed as traditional. No, there's no songwriting credit. It's they're using an arrangement, and of course they're Cream. They did it their way, you know. But I've acousticized it. And Chloe, come here and say hello, because I just sang a song about you. Chloe just walked in. Just come here. Hey, come here. Say hello. Chloe's going to just come into camera view for a moment and just say hello, because we were just singing about her a little bit.
Hi, Chloe.
That's
hi.
Chloe May.
Nice.
She's 16.
To see you again. Yep. Wow.
I changed her diapers every day. That's why I wasn't
talking
to T-Tonks.
Thanks a lot, Dad.
You have anything to say about that? How did I do as a diaper changer?
You're pretty good.
I was very good at it. As a matter of fact, I loved doing it. I was terrified before I ever did one, and then it was a piece of cake.
And Chloe, what do you think about your dad doing the song that he explains as being, you know, for you and your girlfriends?
I mean, it's definitely, I can definitely understand it, since it was something that was happening ever since I started driving, pretty much.
Driving in the car, you mean?
Yeah.
Being in the car.
Yeah.
She sees it as a parody of the girl, of me and the girls, you know, which it kind of is. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't really, I still let them play their songs sometimes, but there were a few times I put my fist down and said, only blues in this car, you know.
How did that go over with your friends?
He could be he was kind of he could be lenient sometimes, yeah. But friends that know him, I don't know.
Am I the only parent who draws the line and shuts the radio off over booty songs that come
on?
You know, I mean, you should hear these. I'm talking. You know, I was the editor of Screw magazine, and I'm still like shocked by what I'm hearing.
This is the first time Chloe is hearing this. I'm sure.
Fighting for sexual freedom 35, 40 years ago. Look at what it's resulted in. My God. Anyway, thank you for.
Thank you, Chloe. It's nice to see you.
Let's go off the hook here. Curtsy.
So now that you brought it up, I got to ask, how's that whole fight for sexual freedom going now that you have a 16-year-old?
It went far. pull it back, and we have regrets about what we all accomplished. You know, at time it needed to be done. Right. You know, in early 70s and stuff, it needed to be opened up, and you know, the repression was terrible. But now it's gone too far.
Now, once you have that 16-year-old daughter, you know it's gone too far, goddammit.
You just turn into everybody else.
It's weird. The
parent thing turns you into – you know about this, right? You know, I have other friends who once worked in that industry who, once they became fathers years later, changed their tune a little bit about, oh, my God, what these girls have to see every day and the pressure they're under.
Right.
All that.
Yeah, it definitely changes your mind. And when you're dealing with middle school and high school parents, and they want to know what you do, and they start looking into you a little bit, and you're like, ah, crap, because you know they want to be careful where they send their own kids.
They have I have no problem with that down here in Texas. I mean, I've been on PTA meetings, and you know, and I do crime patrol, and you know, everybody, you know, they're amused, or they're just they find it really interesting. I haven't had any what you would think. You know, people who see that I wrote Tales of Times Square, they're usually fascinated by it, or they don't pay attention. It doesn't even register, you know. And I can just be like a middle American here in the heartland of Texas, you know. And it's just that's not a problem, believe it or not.
They're still probably trying to figure out how they got a Jew in Texas. They're probably back on that. They probably haven't even.
There's a few down here, and you know, I've been here 20, going on 30 years. You know, so and I go up to New York every 3 months. You know, so I can enjoy it now, as opposed to, I would never want to live there ever again. But I love it for 3 or 4 nights, and then get the hell out and come back to Texas.
Have a little nosh, have a little deli, right?
Oh, a little. I go 24/7 around the clock. I don't even go to sleep when I'm in New York. I just practically stay up 4 nights in a row. But then I get the hell out and come back home.
Right.
It still feels like home up there, but this is home.
I get it. I like to. There's a Jersey boy. I like to go back there once a year or so, get a little taste of it, see the friends and the family. But I can't wait to get out.
And then leave.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, and you don't want to overstay your welcome anyway. That's what I tell them.
Hey, 4 nights in New York is paradise. 5 nights is hell.
There you go. All right, so look, the you're going to do a second song for us. This is going to be Deep River Blues 2. Anything you want to tell us about the song?
Deep River, Doc Watson, who we lost a few years ago in his 80s, possibly the greatest country music person in a century, I would think. You know, it's debatable, but I put him up as the greatest country music musician of all time. And he did an arrangement, again, uncredited to any songwriter. It came from a 1930s recording by the Delmore Brothers called Deep River Blues, and he developed it into a flat-picking thing. I put it on my first album, Famous and Poor, 25 years ago, but I never quite got it right. You know, I was the boom chucks weren't clear enough. I don't know if I can make them happen now, but I got it on the album. So I called it Deep River Blues 2.
All right.
Yeah.
Folks, I give you Josh Allen Friedman on guitar performing Deep River Blues 2.
Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain. I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, let the waves sweep along, cause I got them deep river blues. My old gals, good old pals, look just like a waterfowl when I get them deep river blues. Ain't no one to cry for me, and the fish all go out on a spree when I get them deep river blues. If she'll float, cause I got them deep river blues. Now I'm gonna say goodbye, and if I sink, just let me die, cause I got them deep river blues. With me, I go down, don't you see? Cause I got them deep river blues. I'm going back to Muscle Shoals, times are better than I'm told. Cause I got them deep river blues. Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more. I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, let the waves sweep along, but I got them deep blues.
All right. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. So, that's about as conservative as I get on my album. Everything else gets is kind of wacky and crazy.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, like Shaft. We're doing a video of Shaft that has me walking across 125th Street in Harlem, just like the opening credits of the movie Shaft, and looking around and everything. And I was up there a few weeks ago in Harlem to shoot this video. And I said, where's Harlem? It doesn't exist anymore. On one side of the Apollo was the Gap. On the other side was Banana Republic. Mm-hmm. Where did my Harlem go?
Where's
the days of Cab Calloway and everything? We went to East Harlem, Spanish Harlem, looking for all the Cuchifrito places. You know, there were two or three places there. Most of them were gone. Yeah. Another 2 years, it'll all be gone, all gentrified. You know, all I kept seeing white people everywhere. I didn't want to see that. Mm. You know.
You would think that if Harlem, we've come to the point where Harlem is gentrified, then the country must be completely cured of all of its ills because of all the years it was, you know, it was a nasty, scary place, it was a dangerous place. But yeah, it's not the case, obviously. You know, it just moves.
Well, if you go deeper and deeper into it, eventually you're going to still find what we used to call slums, I guess. But I didn't see any for 40 blocks. You know, going on up to Sugar Hill, or you know, we didn't go. I mean, it's still a vast territory. It's not just Harlem. It's like big, but it was everything that I saw was gentrified. Hmm. And I guess there are some benefits to that, but the soul was annihilated, and I was stunned. So we found a few locations that looked like the 1970s Shaft. You know. But not many.
So who,
hard to find.
Who gets to say shut your mouth on your
That's me. Shut your mouth.
Okay.
That's all the voices are me. Oh, okay. All in real time. You know.
I didn't know. Maybe on the video, is there somebody else mouthing the words?
No, it's going to all be me.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll see me at that moment or whether it'll just be me walking, you know, see me playing or whether I'm, you know, in Harlem. You know, we did shot some in Times Square. We shot some on the waterfront. You know, sort of mimicking the opening scene, which kids today would never have seen, of the movie Shaft from 1971, when the Isaac Hayes soundtrack is playing, and he's just walking around, walking through traffic, looking around.
Richard Roundtree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just plays off that, you know. So that'll be the first video for this album, 60. God damn it, you know, the Shaft video. And we'll probably do one or two others. And
So where, as we kind of wrap this up, where can people see you? I understand you've got some actual performing dates coming up.
Well, I'm treading very carefully and just waiting and pull back from live. I love to play live. I love it. But it's got to be right, and it's got to be, you know, I really want to make it theater now, make it more theatrical and do it in theaters. So at this moment, I've just booked three new, you know, I've got my album release concert party at the amazing Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas, Texas, which is going to be presented by KNON 89.3 Radio, our great blues radio station, and everything else. That's on Saturday, October 8th, 2016. And I got a night with Kinky Friedman. Kinky and I play a lot. We're not related, but we're kind of sort of brothers anyway. A night with Kinky Friedman at Poor David's in Dallas. Poor David's, everybody knows here. It's been there for almost 40 years. The great Americana Club. When is that? September 24th? I'm doing a night with David Bromberg at the Kessler, which is like the real happening concert palace here in Dallas on December 7th. I'm doing a night at the Kessler.
David Bromberg, there's a name I haven't heard in 100 years.
Well, I think he's from upstate New York or from the Woodstock area.
Yeah.
And he tours. He still plays all over. You know, he's got an active, you know, roots following. He's probably just in his early 70s. You know, like Maria Muldaur and people like that. He's... So I'm coming to in the works for Los Angeles, of course, New York City, and Austin and Houston. And okay. Then we'll take it from there for concert nights.
I'm guessing there's a website people can go to see these dates?
Oh, man, we got so many websites. I posted on Facebook, Josh Allen Friedman, Facebook. Everything gets posted there. There's a Black Cracker Online website I have that my publisher runs for me. So between Facebook and blackcrackeronline.com, you know, these things get posted.
Should I just assume that Kinky is an honorary member of the Josh, Drew, Kip, and Bruce J?
Well, he's a whole separate category. I don't think my family know. I don't think Drew and Kip know him. I've introduced him to my father once or twice, like 30 years ago in New York, because I even played with him in New York. At the Lone Star a few times. So, and Kinky would come to my gigs. I was in a doo-wop band for years. I remember I introduced him to my father, but Drew and Kip have never met him, so he's not really part of our clan, but we have a Texas thing down here.
Well, what I'm wondering is, should we extend an invitation through you for him to be on the show?
And if you would like, of course.
Hell yeah. Kinky Friedman, sure. I've read his books.
I'm sure he'd be delighted to do your show. You mean he's never been on?
Nope, never been on.
Somehow I would have assumed he was just assumed he was on.
I think a few years ago we reached out to try to get him on and it didn't happen. I read a couple of his mystery novels at the time.
Uh huh.
Featuring Kinky Friedman, as I recall.
Yeah, he features himself.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. He puts friends
in there. You know, he features some of his friends and. I'll put a word in, of course. You know,
Want to extend an invitation, we'd love
tell him. Certainly, when I see him next month, I'll say, "Hey, you got to do Mr. Media. How come you? You know, I thought you already did it.
You thought your career was complete, but you haven't done the meet.
He would he'd be delighted to do it. It'd be crazy. It's crazy that he hasn't.
So the last time we saw you, as we kind of wind things down, you were promoting I. Goldstein, the Al Goldstein book, Screw Magazine.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, you've got the album now. What's in the works next? What's
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I'm doing is my book, Tales of Times Square, which came out in 1985, 86. It's been through many editions. But I was convinced to take about 50 hours of interviews that I did for that book of guys and dolls, like old Times Square, voices from Times Square from the 70s and early 80s. They were old then, old boxers and burlesque guys and strippers. I realized I had cassettes with about 50 hours of talking with them, all the characters in my book, Tales of Times Square. So I digitized all those cassettes before they completely disintegrate and fall apart. A cassette usually doesn't last 40 years. Unless it's very well taken care of. So some of them were falling apart. I got them all digitized, and I'm creating about a 10-hour series, real voices of old Times Square. Podcast, whatever you call it these days,
yeah.
With music and with narration of these people that are these precious old people who were long gone in our civilization from my era of Times Square, which was the dying last days of the Guys and Dolls Damon Runyon era and the whole pornography golden age as it began there. I realized I have a gold mine of this stuff, and there are people who want to hear these long lost voices. Where will it be presented? I'm not sure. Whether it'll be on iTunes or presented through public radio or however, but I think you call them podcasts, and they would just be audio.
Yeah, oh, that sounds great. I can't.
That's one thing that I'm trying to finish right now.
I know the value of that stuff. I went back in the 80s. I was interviewing a lot of musicians and rock stars at the time, and I'd be curious to know if this was your experience. As I've gone back to the audio tapes, the cassettes. The ones that have held up strangely are the ones that were recorded on the cheapest Radio Shack tapes, and the high-end Maxell and TDK and stuff like that, they're the ones that didn't hold up. And unfortunately, my interview with Ella Fitzgerald and Cab Calloway, those are the ones...
tapes.
Yeah, they fell apart, but,
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I have found some of what you're saying to be true. I have cassettes from 1975... that I recorded on the streets of New York and stuff that still sound pristine, and they were on something called Irish tape cassette, which was like sold for like a quarter a cassette on the street. The cheapest, crappiest tape imaginable, and it's held up like plutonium.
Isn't that strange? It's so frustrating too.
And there are Maxells that won't even run. The mechanism in them won't even run anymore, and I had to keep winding it through and unjamming it and everything, and then... But I've saved a lot of voices, old boxers who fought in the 20s, who were just haunting Times Square back in the day, Yeah. So,
I'd kill to have access to my Carl Perkins interview, but it just faded.
They dissolved.
Yeah, it's just gone. It's just awful.
Maybe something to do with the weather in Florida, maybe the humidity, something like that. Because if you kept them like really in plastic container boxes, they would have lasted longer than just being out in the air.
Yeah, who knew in the 80s that I'd be wanting to share those tapes now in the...
But you've got a huge archive, and I'm sure you were able to digitize a lot of stuff.
A lot of it's been saved. A lot of it's up there, so yeah, we'll see. Well, listen, folks, you can find Josh Alan Friedman's latest album, 60, goddammit. I love saying that. 60, goddammit.
That is how pronounce the title exactly.
It sounds like it. It just needs that. It needs a comma. It needs a little comma.
It has one. Music.
Is there one?
Not on the handwriting on the cover.
I see it. Yeah, there it is. I see it now.
Back, you can see the comma. Yeah.
Right.
On the front, that comma's off.
Well, you can find it at great online music stores, or you can order it. And any of his previous albums and books right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are on the site or one of our related sites, below the video or underneath the audio player, you'll see a cover of the 60 Goddamn It, or you may see Black Cracker. Click on it, take you to Amazon. You can order it right now, great price, and kick a little something back to your pal, Mr. Media. So we mentioned about website. You were on Facebook, right? People can find you.
Yeah, Josh Allen Friedman, Friedman, easy to find on Facebook.
And there's also on Facebook is the group that you and your brothers have put together for your dad.
Oh yeah, right? That's really something. We didn't know it would go. It's going into a year now. Mm-hmm. We thought it would for a few months. We'd post a Bruce J. Friedman tribute site. It's not a memorial site. He's 86 years old, but he doesn't go on Facebook himself. You know, he just doesn't. So we post, and other people, everyone's welcome to post if they have something pertaining to Bruce J. We've been amazed how much stuff there is over the last, 60 years of stuff, even more.
It's amazing. The memorabilia, the book covers.
Book covers, magazine short stories, interviews, photos. They're just like thousands. And they're all finding their way into the Bruce J. Friedman Facebook page.
Yeah, it's very cool. If people know his work, or if they don't know his work, they should find out about his work. They probably know his work without knowing that they know his work.
Oh, everybody knows numerous things he's done, even if they don't know who wrote them.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, listen, Josh, we've had you seems like all day today with the technical issues we worked out. But
it was worth every bit of hell that we went through to get this working.
And thank you, Jerickson at Skype for finally getting us over the hump. Josh, great to see you. My best as always to your family, and thank you so much for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Hey, really great.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of bad mother effers in sheep's clothing in the Noonan Media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
What do you think?
You can see me!
I can
All
see
right.
you!
Fantastic!
Okay, before you go, I just want to remind you that Audible.com was our sponsor today, and you can get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow, TRYNOW. Again, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. I don't know about you, but that Johnny Cash biography, as read by Chris Christopherson, I think I'm going to grab that one right now.